This is the Living Fearless Today podcast, a show that helps men like you and me who are struggling to get unstuck and overcome fear to live confidently and courageously. I'm your host and transformation coach, Mike Forrester, helping you create the change you want now. Join me as I interview men who've conquered their challenges and soared to success as they spill their secrets on how they live fearless today. Well, hello and welcome back, my friend. Man, this week I'm joined by Anthony Godere. So Anthony is doing coaching. He's got an amazing story of coming out of depression, like the self-awareness, right? So we're going to talk about how that a lack of it can be detrimental to our development, who we are, how we show up, and then just kind of walking through also like perfection. It was something that was like seen as a badge of honor. I thought that was a strength for me. Same with Anthony, but it can also, as you'll find out in our conversation today, it's going to be detrimental. It's like carrying around an anchor that actually puts us on a path to where we think we want to go, but it's not actually the destination that we're after. So Anthony's going to help us to see like, hey, how do we determine what things are holding us back and where do we want to go? So this is going to be an insightful one. Really excited. Anthony, how are you doing today, my friend?
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate you having me. And thank you so much for creating a platform where we can talk about important topics like this, man. Thank you so much.
Absolutely, buddy. I've loved our conversation, you know, both the experiences that we've gone through and what we're doing now and like where we're going. So just the transformation that's available once we set our minds to things. Our mind to things. I only have one. That's enough to control.
Right.
But, you know, it's been an amazing conversation. And so I was really stoked to, you know, be able to take it to another level here. So let's start out with what does life look like for you today on the professional side of life?
Yeah. I'm fortunate enough to where I can make a living coaching others through everything that I've been through, right? To prioritize things in a way and be vulnerable and share my story so that someone else either doesn't have to go through it at all, or they can create that stopgap to pull themselves out of it a lot sooner. And I think a lot of my hyper focus has been around mental health, suicide support. But even from the career development and executive presence aspect, that's something I've experienced in as well. So something for everyone, a little bit of variety there, right? I think one of the few bright spots to come of COVID, not too many of them, but the ability to work virtually and have the opportunity to connect with anyone, anywhere as like, this is the new norm, is one of the few things that I am grateful for that I'm trying to find silver lining in with something even as awful as what COVID was. So, I think just very, very fortunate to be able to coach, to partner on some of these podcasts and just create meaningful content for others that might help them in their journey. It's a dream scenario.
Yeah. That was a rough time for all of us. I don't know anybody that was like, hey, that was smooth sailing, unless you were absolute introvert and just, you know, having the time of your life away from people doing DoorDash. For the vast majority of us, that was a rough time. So yeah.
Being as introverts, you know, we were social distancing before it was cool, man, you know?
Like. Right. It was like, this is the way I want things anyways. What's the problem here? Exactly. Well, let's jump over to the personal side. What does your personal life look like right now, man?
Yeah, I mean, I own my own home. Got a few bedrooms, a yard for the pups to play in. A beautiful wife with a very, very healthy relationship. We actually live the dink life. That's dual income, no kids. So fortunate enough to be able to have my own personal space and something I can afford and something that you don't have to, you know, live in debt. You don't have to live in this victim type world, and fall into the pitfalls that depression can create.
Yeah. And it's something when you change from where like you and I were with that victim mindset, right? Now with what you do have, you're able to enjoy it and fully be present and be grateful for what you're experiencing, what you have, and where you're going. Is that something that, like, in day to day, like, you and your wife talk about, or like, you reflect upon that, hey, like, I do have all these things, not where I thought I was going to be?
Yeah, I think we have more than we ever thought was even possible for us. It's the fleas in the jar study. Is that something that you've heard of before by chance?
Yeah, go ahead and share it though.
Yeah. So for your listeners, the fleas in the jar study. So for context, a flea has a vertical of 8 inches, which is incredible. And you wouldn't think 8 inches, I could jump higher than that, but you got to understand that is 66 times their body length. So their vertical is insane. And they did a study where, they took fleas and they put them in a jar without the lid on it. And because they can jump so high, they were able to hop out of the jar pretty easily. But they found that if they put a jar on with the fleas inside of it and leave it there for 4 or 5 days, well, the fleas got kind of tired of hitting their head on the top of that jar. Well, after the few days, they removed the lid and they just wanted to see what happened. And the fleas would only jump as high as where the lid was previously. And I think that that's so powerful because, again, it's that sort of like law of exposure that says, well, if you've got a family of fleas in there and kids grow up in that environment, well, there's that invisible lid that's there. They only jump that high because that's what they think that they're capable of, right? That's all that you know. But when in reality, you can do so much more. You got to be able to remove the lid. And I think that was a really big identifier for us that says we needed to remove the lid. Yes, we had a certain level of exposure. We saw what was possible in our current circles and where we grew up and our environment that we were raised in. But once you change that environment and you start getting perspective of what else is out there, just getting that perspective is that game changer that allows you to remove the lid.
Yeah. We all have lids in our life that, you know, it's limiting beliefs that we feel they're true and fully look at it and go, this is reality. But when we step back from a different perspective, we can see that, no, that's not actually how it is. And I can obtain more. When you look back at that time, you know, hey, this is all I'm going to get. And now you're in this different place of having abundance and all these amazing things in your life. What do you see that were some of those things that were creating a lid for you and your wife in your life at that time?
Admittedly, for me, there was a lot of entitlement growing up. I had a lot of self-sabotage in my life. It was very, very pointed. Why would I need to take ownership for anything? I deserve X, Y, and Z. There's just certain things that are easier for other people and it's just not fair. It was just this really toxic, negative, angry mindset. Like I could just find the negative in like any situation for whatever reason. So it was only after I started doing the mirror work and I took the time to really hyper focus on my own self growth and my self development that I was able to turn a corner. But everything leading up to that was just, why me?
You said mirror work there. What is mirror work and how did you use that to change things?
Yeah, so I think redefining certain terminology helped me to get into a space of finding my purpose. So education, for instance. Well, I had always thought education to me was like, okay, so you go through school, you got your history class, you've got your algebra, your trigonometry you may or may not ever use in your life, you know, all these different courses, the prerequisites there. What I decided to redefine that as is self-education. So, okay, what's your blood type? What's going on with your health? What's going on, not just with your physical health, but with your mental health? What are the things that you can learn about yourself and kind of how you tick? That's the foundation for you to be able to define the clarity and confidence that you're going to need to remove that lid. So, I think that it was really, when I say mirror work, that is self-discovery. That's understanding who I am. What are my current limitations? what am I willing to settle with in my limitations and what I would need to be able to do to pull myself out of that if that's where I didn't want to exist.
So that kind of goes back to the self-awareness of really reflecting on who you are and where you're at, and then genuinely understanding where you're wanting to go. Is that accurate?
Absolutely. Yeah. In full vulnerability, I did have my run-in with suicide. I had an attempt in 2008. And as much of a low point as it was in my life, the self-sabotage did not stop there. And I probably avoided mirrors for the better part of a decade. And I think that's why I've kind of taken that self-education, that self-discovery, and reworked that into mirror work, because that was the one thing that I avoided for so long. And it was only until I was willing to look at that reflection and analyze it and assess it and learn about it and start making change towards it that I was able to turn a corner.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's powerful when you're able to make an honest assessment and then be vulnerable, not only with others, but also yourself. I mean, how many of us, you know, keep like a facade, even going, that's not who I am. I'm this, I'm putting on this image outside. You know, when we go back, part of your journey was, getting to that point of self-awareness, but leaving behind like the passive aggressive behavior and thought patterns. And you talked about the self-sabotage, the depression, like how did those things get fostered in you? How did they come about in like your upbringing as you're going from a child to an adult? Like what kind of events or things people said, how did those take place and become part of who you were at that time?
Yeah, I think for my childhood growing up, it was sort of it is what it is. And that was the lid that was on the jar. This is how it is. This is the way the economy is. This is the way that you make money. This is the way that a relationship works. This is the way that your weight management and your health works. Like it was just taking everything at face value rather than taking the information, tailoring it to make it useful for myself and digestible for myself, and then making some sort of implementation off of it rather than just saying, okay, well, I guess 2 + 2 = 4. So I'm just going to go ahead and say 2 + 2 = 4. Now, yes, 2 + 2 = 4 objectively, but there are other variables that make out your life's equation. So rather than just saying, yes, 2 + 2 = 4, what other variables in your life are you not considering? Because that might yield a different product than 4 at the end of the day. So when we talk about the specific like life altering moments, I think the suicide attempt obviously was one of the bigger ones. But when you experience enough pain, or if you have your head in the clouds and you envision enough pleasure, you're going to start making a change. Unfortunately, I was on the former side where I was just tired of the pain. I was tired of having to choose between whether I wanted to eat this week or to pay the electric bill and be able to watch TV. Like I was tired of feeling like I'm in a dead end job and I can't get anywhere. I was tired of feeling like I was meant for something more. Like there was something there. And it sounds a little cliche. We're talking about finding your life's purpose or finding, you know, meaning, you know, why are we here? And, you know, I think enough pain will force you into that. And I think that's why I got into coaching, is to help to hopefully minimize or potentially even avoid what that pain was and get into the dreamer state, get into the, I want to visualize all the good things that can come of me making changes, as opposed to, well, I've reached enough pain and I'm finally sick and tired of it, and now I'm willing to make a change.
I know for myself, I did the same thing of being frustrated and doing that ebb and flow, right? The whole cycle. What was it that finally kind of was, you know, the catalyst that caused you to say, hey, I'm going to make a change and not just continue on that crazy cycle?
I think it was, oddly enough, it was changing from one 9-to-5 job to another. Now that doesn't sound like a glorious aha moment, but what was interesting about it is that actually walked out. Now, I don't recommend walking out of your 9 to 5 in the middle of your shift, but that was my journey. I was sitting there, I was stocking shelves, and I remember the moment, I can visualize it. I was 10 feet away from the checkout counter. I'm a manager with keys to the store, making like $12 an hour at the time. And I'm just like, there's gotta be something more than this. Like I doing the same thing over and over again. This is not the life I want to live. This is not what I'm meant for. And I stopped stocking and I walked out. And from there, there wasn't a whole lot of productivity in that time. It was just, I'm done. Right. It was only after I was like, okay, well, your 401k that you saved up is only going to take you so far. Eventually you're going to have to make a change. I said, all right, well, at least I'm starting with this clean slate. So yes, it's another 9 to 5, but it's a clean slate. I get to reinvent myself. I get to rebrand myself with this. And I think that was the snowball effect that needed to get me started, that says, okay, I'm okay with being that try hard. That's figuring out who I need to connect with and learn more. I'm okay having a mentor. I'm okay having a coach. I'm okay seeking help rather than just trying to do everything on my own and make it my own way. And I see the value of the perspective of others, regardless of what our working relationship is not. You can learn anything from everyone. Now, that doesn't mean it's always going to be gold necessarily, but sometimes you learn from folks that says this is what not to do necessarily. So I really just rebranded myself by saying, I'm going to offboard from this. Hyper-focus on this, and I'm going to get really good at that. And I really just started stumbling into one success after another, and it really just brought me back to what I was learning about myself in my mirror work, in my self-education, was like, man, I could really make an impact for someone else beyond this 9 to 5 and beyond the corporate overage. Like, I could help someone to maybe prevent them from even trying to commit suicide. I can help someone from maybe even going down the path of feeling like they wasted 10 years of their life. To me, regardless of what the salary is for that, I could feel like I'm making a real impact.
You got a clean slate. You knew you wanted to make a change. What were some of the first like actions that you began that, you know, helped you, as you said, stumble into those first wins, those first successes, and change your perspective? Like, what were the first things, the first steps you took?
Seeking help, getting guidance and getting perspective from others that were where I wanted to be at the time. So normally when you start out with a 9 to 5, you probably start from the bottom, right? So you're looking at someone at a higher level that has something that you feel like is within your realm of attainment, but also something that makes sense for what your journey is, not just because of the salary or the title or whatever the case is. Like, this is where I could envision myself in 2 years. So I want to connect with this person, learn about them, learn about their journey and how I might be able to take something from them, apply it to myself and get to that position in a future state. So gaining perspective from others was absolutely my step one, and aligning who that next person was that I was going to connect with into what my career journey was. And from there, you start gaining a lot more confidence because of the competency. Like, all it is when someone says, oh, this person's super confident, it's like, well, it's not something that you're born with. It's something that's acquired over time. It's just getting the reps. And I think that was another limiting belief that I had growing up, was like, well, I wasn't born confident. I'm never going to be confident. Okay, well, someone with depression, that was probably one of the worst things that you can say to someone that's going through it. Just like, yeah, we might as well just kick them while they're down, you know? So once I started understanding, I'm getting this perspective and okay, confidence is not something born with, I can actually acquire this. So, okay, let me get the reps in. Let me grind a little bit. Well, now I'm sitting in the room and I'm getting towards the head of the table, because I rinse and repeat that same methodology that says, okay, find that next mentor, find that next coach, find that next individual that can give me perspective and help me to kind of climb this ladder. I started noticing that I was like, ooh, I'm the mentor now. So now I got to help others and pull them up, which is rewarding work. Don't get me wrong. Leadership in a 9 to 5 can be very rewarding. But after a while, you start running into certain barriers that I can't talk about my depression. I can't talk about my suicide attempts. I mean, HR would have a field day with that conversation at a 9 to 5, right? So now I'm getting to the point where, again, that confidence is overflowing. And yes, I can share that confidence with others, But now I have enough confidence that says, well, you know what? I've seen how it can be done, but now I have the confidence to take that into my own level of creativity and do it in my own way and do it in a way that I feel as though makes more impact for the individual beyond their 9 to 5. I think that was really a big catalyst moment for me as I'm gaining these proficiencies and I'm getting better about what I'm doing in my 9 to 5 is like, you know, this is great for the CEO. It's great for his pocketbook, but it is not necessarily as good as the people that I'm leading. I know I could be doing more for them and I owe it to them to do more for them. And the only way that I can do that is find my own creative path to be able to do that without the HR person keeping me in line.
So as you continued on that path, right, you're becoming more self-aware, you're changing your perspective. How did you then, in light of what you had experienced, you know, growing up, that it puts you in that position of having that lid on your life, how did you reflect and look at your past so that it wasn't being a lid anymore, but that it was removed, and you could see things differently? How did you work to change that perspective on your past?
I needed a coach that was willing to remove the gloves. Like that's fine that you have mentorship in your 9 to 5, and that's fine that you have folks that are trying to develop you on the career side of things, but that's only one component of your life. What about your love life? What about how you manage your finances? What about your friendships? What about any other recreation that's important to you? What about societal contributions that might be important to you? Whatever the case is, that there's more than just one piece of that pie, which is just this money-making machine, right? And for my clients, I've always recommended the life wheel exercise, and that's something that I do anywhere from 1 to 3 times a week, depending on how busy the week is and how many times I need to shift gears, because there's so many other facets of your life beyond your 9 to 5 or beyond your love life or beyond your depression, whatever the case is. That's part of it. Yes. But as you're trying to figure out what your identity is, there's multiple pieces that go into what formulates that. So when I got my own coach, because I felt that was a necessity, if I'm going to get into coaching, I need to be willing to be coachable as well. And that was sort of my kick in the pants that says, okay, I need to think a little bit bigger. It's got to go beyond the 9 to 5. Like, yes, you can go into coaching and just focus on the niche of executive coaching, career development, presence. But I wanted to think bigger than that. I wanted to consider all of the pieces of my life wheel. I wanted to consider all the different facets of my life. And as I did more of that work that said, okay, well, I've got some imbalances here and I've got some challenges there, the more that I started focusing on my own self-growth, the more I started focusing on my mental health and my self-awareness, I'm like, I'm really starting to love what I do. And what better way to make a living than to make an impact for others so they don't have to go through the same trial and error spot for 30 years like I did.
I think when we're transitioning out of, you know, having that lid, having those beliefs that are holding us back and, you know, only what we can attain, right? We have that cap. It's hard to then look at our future and go, hey, this is what I want, to get in touch with your dreams when they've been squelched. You know, people have been naysayers. How did you get to a point where you were able to look at, you know, here's 6 months down the road, here's a year down the road, here's 5. This is where I want to be. This is what I want to be doing. How did you make the transition from being limited in what you could see and felt you deserved to then being able to dream and cast a bigger vision?
Yeah. I had to get very strategic. You have your dream scenario, your dream goals, the why you do things, right? So for me, at that time, it was to be a motivational speaker and be this coach that can help pull people out of depression, right? But there's got to be a short-term goal in there, and there's got to be daily behaviors that take part of that. And what helped to keep someone like me with depression productive was really just hyper-focusing on my controllables, There's three different sections of your life, and that's what you can control, what you can influence, and what you have absolutely no control over. And I found that some of that negativity, that anger, the stuff that I grew up with, those limiting beliefs, I spent a lot of time in the negative. And I spent even more time when I was trying to pull myself out of it in the influence piece of it. And you can feel like you're beating your head against a wall after a while. Like, there's only so many conversations you can have to try and convince someone before you start wanting to shake them a little bit to get them to understand, right? So for me, I got to focus on what I can control. I can control what I put in my body. I can control what content that I'm allowing in my life, whether that's the relationships that I have, whether that's your social media pages, whatever the case is. You can control what you're consuming, whether that's up here or whether that's in your gut. And the more that I focus on my controllable with the daily behavior consideration to a short-term goal and all those short-term goals that led up to my long-term, it was really just this almost systematic approach that allowed me to remove a lot of the barriers that I had in place previously. But the emotional catalyst for me was that you can only focus on what you can control. Yes, you can spend a little time influencing, but don't spend too much time there for someone like me, because you'll get stuck in there and then you'll start doing donuts and you're just spinning wheels in place. You're not going anywhere because you're so focused on trying to influence and convince somebody else that you're starting to lose sight of your own progress at that
point. Yeah. So how do you determine like what things can be controlled, what can be influenced versus what you have no control or influence over? Because I think too many of us have come up with a belief it can all be controlled. How did you look at things and go, yes, I need to invest here. No, I don't need to invest there, you know, in looking at those three pillars like you talked about.
Yeah. So I'll use depression as the example. What can't I control? Well, I focused a lot on why do I have depression? To me, that was a dangerous space to be. That was the non-control. When I shifted my focus to, instead of asking the question of why do I have depression? I have depression. What can I do about it? That allowed me to say, okay, so that pushes off to the side what I can't control. Then you got to be even more strategic. Says, okay, I can influence this versus what I can actually control. And again, it goes back to that consumption, right? I can control who I follow. I can control who is in my social circle. I can control what I'm doing on the day to day in my free time, whether that's something that's helping me grow and self-develop, watching like a Netflix documentary on mental health versus watching Vanderpump Rules. Again, it's up to you what you decide to invest your time in. But be mindful of what your energy is when you're consuming that type of stuff. So do you feel better after you're consuming this? Or are you feeling like you need to go take a nap? Like, to me, if I need to go take a nap, if I need to disconnect, that is a red flag for me that says, okay, I really need to refocus myself on my controllables. I might be spending too much time in the influence because my energy is really low.
Did you see a correlation between like depression and your energy level? And then when you looked at it and, you know, kind of made that decision, hey, I'm going to handle this differently as far as I'm going to remove myself from this feeling of depression and focusing on lack or the faults that have gone on, right, that have gotten you into that depressive state. When you got out, did you, you know, then see your depression and your energy level increase as you were intentional about addressing the depression?
Yeah, I think that's fair. There absolutely was a correlation there. And I've got a story for you about this. And I actually just went through this in the last 2 weeks. So woke up on the wrong side of the bed, right? That's the common phrase that comes up, but I knew something was up with my depression. I was off. And thankfully I have a loving, supporting wife that works with me on this as long as I'm communicating, right? That's the thing. Hey, having an off day. I'm going to be quieter than usual, right? Like, we still might be holding hands. Like, you still got to make sure you're being a good husband. You're doing your husbandly duties, right? We're holding hands or we're cuddling or watching TV together or whatever the case is. Just allow me to not have to talk while I work my way through. This has always kind of been my approach, right? Well, it just didn't work for me. You know, I talked about it a minute ago where we're saying I need to disconnect, right? So I'll go take a nap or go play video games or go listen to music. It's all of those approaches to me was like, if you're going with the analogy that life is a highway, well, I was looking for an off ramp. Anytime I'm depressed, I'm looking for an off ramp and I need to find a rest stop. Well, that wasn't working for me. So let me try something different. So yeah, I'm still going to be quiet because that's, you get on your own head about it. I'm still going to be quiet, but maybe instead of getting on the off ramp, maybe I just need to get in the slow lane. So I operated my normal day to day at about 45 to 50% speed, right? So not taking a whole bunch of meetings. I don't know if I'm in the headspace to have a conversation with Mike today, but you know what? I can do some laundry. All right. Let me go do some laundry. And oh, well, wifey wants me to go do a return real quick at Walmart. So let me go do the return at Walmart, and I'll walk around Walmart. Not that I need to, but I'll just walk around again. I'm just trying to get some fresh air, trying to keep moving, but I get to go slower, right? And by the time I got to my third errand at that point, which was, you know, picking up steaks at the butcher, was, I feel kind of good. That's kind of weird. Like, I just kind of like fumbled into it. I'm like, huh, okay. So I go in and I start noticing I'm having an exchange with the person that's ringing me up, and I'm actually like talking, having a full blown conversation. We're smiling or laughing. I'm cracking jokes. I'm like, okay, I'm good. I'm back. All it took was just 90 minutes of me just like slowly moving through my day, doing some of the admin stuff, so to speak. I found that I just need to get in the slow lane. So the takeaway that I would say for this is, you know, for those that are struggling with depression or struggling with, you know, lack of motivation or discipline, you know, the things that you find yourself doing, again, self-assess, does it really help you at the end of the day? It might help you in that moment, potentially. But when you come out of that moment, did that take you 30 minutes to get out of that moment? Did it take you half a day? Did it take you a weekend? Did you find yourself in a funk for a week? I don't know if any of those timelines resonate with you, Mike, but for me, I was like, there's got to be a better way than just like, okay, I guess this is just my mental health weekend. I need to figure out how to get myself back, you know? Getting in the slow lane and understanding you don't have to be in the fast lane all the time. You don't even have to go the speed limit. And frankly, there is no speed limit. There's no cops on your life's highway. No one's going to pull you over because you're going too fast or you're going too slow. But if you find yourself that, yes, everyone needs to take a rest day, everyone needs time to disconnect. For those that go through depression, you find that when you go on the off ramp, it doesn't help. Try going in the slow lane instead.
Yeah, it's one of those of also when, like you're talking about, right? It took 90 minutes to reframe, to re-energize and pull yourself out of that. 90 minutes versus where before it could have been 90 hours where I was depressed. That's a win. And to be grateful and acknowledge that win and celebrate it and be like, hey, it's getting better. I'm improving. What could I learn from this situation? I mean, that's vital. Like, you know, you talked about being depressed and where you were looking for off ramps. And now you're like, hey, I'm going to go engage. Maybe it's at 40%, but that 40% is 100% of what you've got, right? It's everything you have. Okay. You're fully engaged. Maybe you're not, you know, doing the 80 miles an hour down the freeway, like you talked about, but you're still doing 40. 40 is better than 5.
Right. So, better than taking a nap at the off ramp and then trying to reassess, okay, where am I again before you get back on the road? Right. Yeah. And it goes back to your point about the energy levels. When I found myself slowly coming out of it. And when I finally got out of it, I was just so excited to get home and tell my wife, like, oh, I can't wait to tell Mike this. I can't wait to share this with my clients. Like, this is so cool that I was able through trial and error to figure this out. And that's the whole thing about sharing perspective is you're taking someone else's experience. You're sharing their tips and tricks of what they are able to do. You take that at face value initially. You maybe tweak it a little bit. Maybe the slow lane isn't for everyone. Maybe they need to go at least the speed limit for their own reasons, whatever the case is. But you take that perspective, you tailor it, and you're better for it, and you have more energy for it.
Yeah, there's been those times where it's like 2 miles an hour is all I can do. Mm-hmm. That's the best I can do. And right. Just moving at that pace.
I might have to switch vehicles, right? I'm going from my Honda Civic over to like the little scooter, and the max speed on that thing's like 25. Like, you're still moving.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. I want to jump back. You had said like when you were able to transition from your 9-to-5 job, right? That gave you an opportunity to create a clean slate. If somebody's at the point where it's like they're at that first 9-to-5, and there isn't that opportunity for them just to walk away from that job, what are some things that they can do to still create that kind of clean slate, or at least that opportunity to begin looking at things from a different perspective, a different angle, and start working on their self-awareness to change their life, right? To bring about that transformation.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be as theatrical as walking out of your 9-to-5 in the middle of your shift. I think ultimately what it comes down to, it sounds very simple. So if it's simple, it can't be true. I promise you, it's just a decision. All you have to do is just make the decision, the commitment that says, I am willing to go on this journey and to prioritize figuring out what my identity is. That's it. You're not saying I'm going to know what my identity is tomorrow. That's not saying I know what my identity is right now and I'm going to be shot out of a cannon tomorrow, because even then, motivation's very fleeting. That's going to be a fantastic 48 hours for you. And then I don't know what's going to happen come Monday, right? I think, again, seek out that healthy, that positive perspective. Reassess what is around you, what energy is circling you, and is that helping you in your identification process, or is it setting you back? And you might have to make some tough decisions. There are people that I grew up with that I have not talked to in years, and I had to make some very tough decisions on who I allowed to have in my life. And unfortunately, there are energy vampires out there. That's just what it is. But it comes back to, that is your decision of whether you allow that to happen. That is fully within the left side of your controllables that says this is within your control. Who you're talking to, what content you're absorbing, and making the decision that says, I'm willing to prioritize me. And it's not selfish, at least in my mind. I don't see that as being selfish. The cliche is, you got to put your mask on before you help someone put their mask on. Anyway, right? Like, that is absolutely a widely socially acceptable common phrase that's out there. Prioritize you. Just make the decision to seek help, prioritize you, and figuring yourself out within your identity. That is your first step. That's all you need. You don't have to quit your job. You don't have to leave to get into a different position. You don't have to, you know, change your relationship status on Facebook. Like, it doesn't have to be all as dramatic as that. It really is simply making a decision. And I think a lot of people doubt that because it can't be that simple. Mike, there's no way. Like, yeah, if I could have made that decision, I would have done that years ago. It's the follow through after the decision, and it's the support that you're going to get from that mentorship, that coaching, that perspective, that's going to help you to maintain and stay consistent.
Yeah. And simple doesn't necessarily mean easy. It just means it's not complex to have that process, right? But it can be very challenging, just like going to the gym and you bench press. There's nothing complex about the bench press itself, but it can be hard depending upon where you're at and what you're trying to move weight-wise, right? So yeah, simple doesn't mean necessarily easy.
Great example. Yeah. And if you've never lifted weights before, right, you might need a spotter, even if you're just using the bar. You got to get your form down, right? Like, find a spotter. That's it.
Yes. As you look back on this in talking about like boundaries, right, you cut out some relationships. I know when I did that same thing, there was guilt kind of in making that decision and then keeping with that decision. Was that something that you experienced as well in the beginning? And how did you stay consistent with your decision to say, like, no, that's not a healthy relationship. I need to let this one go, or to let them only be active at a certain point?
I think for me, it was a combination of energy assessments and taking a step back to understand why someone might be changed. The latter is probably a little bit easier initially, because now you're looking for it. Normally, you don't think about it. Like, friend reaches out, hey, you know, talking fantasy football or whatever the case is. But when you're looking for it, you'll be able to quickly identify who's reaching out to you because they need something. And then radio silence for a while. And then they reach out again. Oh, they need something again. Like, there's no value exchange that's there. That was a pretty easy identifier for me when I started paying attention and looking for it. That's all it is. Just pay attention and look for those signs that says someone willing to exchange value for you, or if you need something, what is their response to that? Is it, well, I might be busy this weekend, or I got something going on, you know, maybe next time kind of thing. Again, when you start looking for, you'll see whether or not there's going to be that exchange there. And referring back to the energy assessment, you know, you talked about as you're managing the depression, you're determining whether you're going to take an off ramp or go in the slow lane or whatever the case is. It does correlate with your energy levels. It says when you're done talking to this person, do you have more energy or less? I already know coming into this conversation, I'm going to be flying after I'm done talking to Mike. I already know that because we've had conversations in the past, and because of the platform you created, I already know that this is going to be rocket fuel for the rest of my day, probably going into the rest of my year, which doesn't sound like a lot because it's only 8 days, but that is the catapult that I need to start off 2024, right? And mine. But I think that if you were to look at the other side of that coin, right? Well, I don't really have a whole lot of energy. I'm not talking to this person. I'm exhausted. It feels like I just got out of a 12 round fight. Like, again, if you're looking for it, it changes the dynamic of whether or not it's worth it to have those individuals around or to have that social media page up, right? There's certain posts that you're scrolling through and you're like, I don't feel so great about myself after looking at that. Maybe I need to unfollow this. Maybe I'm not ready to follow this right now. I think understanding that you have to be a certain version of yourself, you have to be at a certain level for yourself to be able to absorb certain things, right? We're not going to put you in there for a heavyweight fight if this is your if you're an amateur boxer and this is your first go round. That doesn't make any sense. That doesn't set you up for success. And you're going to get hurt. But if you are to understand and recognize the levels and you slowly make your way up there, protecting your energy along the way of what's helping you, what's setting you back, what's pulling energy, what's pushing energy and motivating you forward, it really is a big eye opener when you just make that small mental tweak that says, I'm going to look for what is going to give me energy. And what does not serve me, what takes energy from me, I need to, at minimum, at least minimize that in my life, even if you can't fully remove.
As you look back, what are like 2 to 3 things that have helped you to really retrain, to educate yourself, like you talked about, right? That have equipped you to move from where you were to where you are and continuing forward. What are like 2 to 3 resources you'd be like, hey, these are beneficial and have been most impactful for me?
Yeah. It's going to be, well, I'll do this 2 ways. So the 3 mindset shifts I would be is that vulnerability, not for social acceptance, but for self-acceptance, should be a priority for you. Focusing on your controllables and identifying what those are and where you spend most of your time is paramount. And perspective is one of your most valuable pieces of currency. Those are the 3 mindset shifts for me that say this keeps my head on a swivel in any and all situations. the tools that I would say help the most with this is going through your life wheel exercise, doing your energy audits and understanding what's taking and what is giving you energy, and making your little Venn diagram of your controllables. What can you control? What are you influencing? And what can you not control? And identify where are you spending most of your time? Where are you spinning wheels? I would say those are really the key components that I'm still using today on a daily basis, whether it's for myself, whether it's for my family and friends, my clients. These are the things that allow me to not only manage my depression, but thrive in my depression and own it through that vulnerability without the use of medication.
I think the biggest challenge in like the energy vampire assessment, or those that aren't healthy for us, can be when it's assessing family, right? How do you deal with them? Keeping that boundary to take care of ourselves. So that's one challenge to get, over that hurdle to cross. But all in due time, and it'll come up, and through practice, you'll get there. I'd be remiss if we didn't touch on one thing. We had talked about perfection and how that can be seen as like a strength, a badge of honor, something that's positive. But in the truest sense, when we're looking at things from a holistic and inclusive, fully inclusive perspective, that can be something that's holding us back or causing us to go off course. Can you give like some insight and maybe an example of where you can look back and see that that was the case for you, and just kind of the truth of it? It's not that badge of honor.
Yeah. For me, perfection is not the secret sauce. That does not mean it can't work, but I think in order for perfectionism to be a useful tool and for you to thrive in that, is turn off your emotions. If you have the militant shut up and do push-ups mentality, perfectionism, you're going to thrive. I'm an emotional guy. I'm a little sensitive, Mike. Okay. It takes some stones for me to be able to say that, because the alpha male mentality, that's out there, that isn't necessarily in line, with that. I think understanding, okay, just because it's effective for someone else doesn't mean it's going to be effective for me. That doesn't mean I just have to accept where I am. So perfectionism for me was very toxic, that said, if I didn't get it perfect and I messed it up, I had a tendency to spiral. I would spiral about, why am I feeling depressed? Like, I was supposed to be perfect. I wasn't supposed to have any depressive episodes at all this year. What the heck happened? And then I started spiraling and doing all these non-productive things within my head. And I don't lean on my tools, and I don't lean on my support, and I don't lean on the things that made me successful in the first place. That's honestly one of the first approaches that I took in pulling myself out of depression that delayed me a few years, is because, well, I can't miss a single workout. I can't miss a single healthy meal. I can't have a single bad depressive day. I have to absorb X amount of content for X amount of time every single day. And you build this sort of like unnecessary pressure on yourself, when realistically that's a completely separate and almost the opposite of what we talked about earlier, which is going in the slow lane. The perfectionism is you're staying in the same lane, the same speed, the entire time. That's too robotic for me. That doesn't mean that it can't work, but for me, as someone that is always trying to get better about their depression and be educated on the mental health capabilities, and where I fall within that spectrum, and how I can do different things, and how I can help others do different things to put themselves into a better space, you can't go the same speed, and you can't do the same thing over and over and over again, because depression is going to invite themselves over. They've got keys to your place, and they've already made up a spot for them to hang out. Like, they'll show up whenever they feel like it. That is absolutely detrimental to that perfectionist approach. can't control.
The other thing it can do negatively is cause us to not take action so that we're not failing. And that was very much what I experienced was, you know, hey, if it's not perfect, I can't release it. I can't go do it, whatever the case may be. And so I missed out on a lot of opportunities through that because it wasn't perfect rather than just acting. Well, Anthony, I appreciate you joining me today, man. Love the fact of talking through depression and just moving at the energy level that we do have and being self-aware, right? Where am I at? Where am I wanting to go? What has gone on and how all that impacts us? How can guys connect and reach out to you outside of this podcast?
Yeah, thesuperlativeyou.com. That is my business. That is my coaching platform. And the way I'm developing it is to make sure that, yes, you have access to all my socials and stuff like that. You have the ability to connect with me and work with me one-on-one if you want, but also to put free content out there so that you can run your own life wheel exercise. I think one of the overlooked goals of a coach is to create self-sufficiency. I don't want you to feel like you need to have a coach like me in your life for the entirety of life. Let's go through this program and let's get you self-sufficient by giving you some clarity and confidence on what your journey looks like.
Absolutely. Love that. Anthony, thank you so much, my friend. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike. Again, I want to double tap on this point. Thank you. Thank you so much for creating this platform and hosting these conversations. It's so ridiculously important. And I cannot thank you enough for creating this. Thank you, sir.
Hey, my pleasure. And thank you, brother. Thanks so much, my friend, for joining me on another episode. If you found the information within the show helpful, please leave a review on the platform you're listening to. It helps raise the show's visibility so other men can join us in breaking free. See you on the next episode, and remember to continue putting yourself out there. Have a great one.